I first started being invited to be a speaker, long before podcasts were a thing, I was just excited to share my stories. Having an online store was the furthest thing from my mind. But now I'm selling some of my favorite things online, and it is so easy. And that is because I use Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform and helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. What I love about Shopify is no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/fortheLove, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/fortheLove now to grow your business. shopify.com/fortheLove. Have you ever noticed how celebrities have brighter, whiter looking eyes? Their makeup artists have a little secret in their kit: Lumify Redness Reliever Eye Drops. You guys, I use these every single day. Lumify dramatically reduces redness in just 1 minute. It literally happens right before your eyes to help them look brighter, whiter, and more awake for up to 8 hours. No wonder it is so loved by influencers, celebrities, and makeup artists, and has over 6,000 five-star reviews on Amazon. Lumify is also the number one eye doctor recommended redness reliever eye drop, and it's FDA approved. No bleach, no dyes. Plus, it's made by the eye care experts at Bausch & Lomb. So whether you're on set, on a date, or running on just a few hours of sleep, you can have eyes that look brighter and whiter with Lumify eye drops. And when you try it, you'll see that it is what your eyes have been looking for. So check out LumifyEyes.com to learn more. Hi, everybody. Jen Hatmaker here, your host of the For the Love podcast. I'm so glad that you're here. I just this very second finished today's interview, and I can say this sincerely, like, I interview a lot of therapists and mental health specialists and wellness experts kind of across the spectrum, and today's conversation, I took a bunch of notes in the middle because I did not want to forget a single thing. Gosh, she really like challenged me and pushed me and asked such pointed, specific questions as any of us are navigating kind of our own healing. A few of them stopped me in my tracks. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself, but I think I just want you to know that I'm really excited for you to be here today. And I think this conversation is really going to serve you. Our guest is just special and she's gifted. And I love the way that she is leading. And I was just really drawn to this conversation. We have the absolutely incredible Kobe Campbell here with us today. So Kobe is an award-winning licensed trauma therapist. She's an author. She's a speaker. She's written a book called Why Am I Like This? And the subtitle really gets to the core of it: How to Break Cycles, Heal from Trauma, and Restore Your Faith. I'm telling you, this is her deal. And so as we got into this conversation today, like, I asked her, what even is trauma? How is trauma different than just pain? So she gets right to the heart of that. Every time I said something, she would push back on it in a more generous reading than the way I self-described. She had more grace inside her answer. She had more nuance and thoughtfulness. And I just kept thinking, oh man, I have some bad narratives that I am still subscribing to. She's got a way that feels comforting and gentle and nurturing and also challenging. You're going to see this. You're going to see this today. So whatever you are bringing to the table right now, whatever trauma, frankly, that you are facing or dealing with, whatever old narrative you are still working to unspool, if there is some pattern or behavior that you think, why do I keep doing this? Like, I don't even want to be like this. This is your conversation. I think you're going to be encouraged today and challenged. And so I just am delighted, really, to bring you this really incredible conversation with the wonderful Kobe Campbell. Kobe, welcome to the show. I am just delighted to meet you. I have a thousand things to say, and they're all competing to like get started. I'm like, Jen, save it for the interview. But I just admire you, and I really love what it is you do. I'm so happy that you're here today.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be here as well.
First of all, let me just ask you this before we get into, because I've got all these like questions around what it is that your expertise is in the world. But can you just like tell my listeners a little bit about you first? Like, this is who you are, and this is where you are, and these are your people, and this is your deal.
Yes, yes. I'm Kobe Campbell. I am a licensed clinical mental health counselor. I'm a mom of two. I'm a wife. And I really like helping people heal. I specialize in trauma and specialize really in emotional trauma and like recovering from the emotional effects of a trauma, the self-esteem effects, the relationship effects of the trauma. I'm sure we'll get into this more, but I love to tell people that trauma is not what happened to you. It's about how it affected you. And like those effects can live in our present, even if the moment's in the past. And so I help people parse through that in creative ways with poems and quick words and thoughts from my kitchen right after I'm done with the session. So, yeah.
Yeah, the writer in me loves that. I am one of those people who struggle to self-assess and to be, I don't have a quiet mind. I struggle to be introspective. And I so often find my feelings by writing them. I wasn't sure what they were until the pen hit the page. And so you do a lot of writing prompts on your socials. And I love them. I am telling you, I read those and then I sit there and think, oh my God, like, you usually will give like an open-ended start, finish the sentence. And all of a sudden, just like that, like you've unlocked something for me that I haven't even really thought of or considered or remembered in a long time. And I love that you give your people various entry points to find their healing, that being one of them.
Yes. I love to make it plug and play because I think that like screaming at people to heal does not teach them anything. It's like saying like engineer a bridge. And it's like, I literally do not even know what the first step is to engineering a bridge is. And I think that that's what a lot of people feel about their healing journey is like, they want to do it. They just don't know where to start. So I like to help people figure out how to start.
So true, particularly around trauma, which is your specialty. And so I just want to jump straight to it, because the book that you've written and all that you delve into there is useful for almost every adult that I know. And so I am curious, what patterns or like repeated behaviors were leaping out to you, perhaps in the work that you do, that prompted you to write a book called Why Am I Like This? You must have been seeing something with your clients, with your patients, and I'm curious what it was that you were seeing.
Yes, I think that I realized that people could not connect their past experiences to their everyday patterns. And like, because this is my work, I could see it. I was like, oh, like that thing you said that doesn't hurt. No, maybe it's not causing you to break down, but it's causing you to engage in this pattern that you hate and you can't stop, which is like one of the things that I help, the questions and the prompts that I provide to clients when I'm helping them figure out, like, oftentimes I know what their trauma is, but I'm like, it's better if you find out yourself and I don't just tell you like, hey, you dealt with abandonment or you deal with this. I ask them, okay, like, what is a pattern that you have that you desperately want to stop, but you just can't? That like by all logical means, you should be able to just stop today, right now. But like for whatever reason, you can't stop. And then the second question is, if you never got to do or engage and partake in that pattern again for the rest of your life, what emotion would you have to get acquainted with?
Whoa, that gave me goosebumps. Whoa, that's pretty deep waters. I mean, if those are the two questions you ask, that session is worth every penny. Can you give an example? Like, you're obviously not speaking about somebody specific, but maybe you are.
Yeah.
But this is an example of
yes.
An early trauma that creates this pattern that sometimes is hard to connect to each other.
Yeah. Well, I think that one that I see that is common, so it's not just a person, but like just common for, I guess, this generation, is like feeling like I have to earn love, right? And so the traumatic moment, one, trauma can be acute, meaning it can be a moment, or trauma can be chronic, meaning it could be several moments over time. And I like to give the example of like trauma can be a boulder or it could be pebbles. But the reality is it doesn't matter. There is no big T trauma and little T trauma, because at the end of the day, all those pebbles amass to the size of a boulder anyways, you know, it's just being accumulated over time. And so maybe the chronic trauma is like, you only really got connection from your parents when you like exceeded at something, when you won an award, like second place was never good enough. Like if you won first place, then your parents took you out to eat and spent time with you and bragged about how much they loved you. But if you got anything other than first, like they just didn't care, or they didn't want to spend time with you and dwell with you, right? Let's say that happens over 10, 15, 20 years, and then you become an adult who never, ever really wants to connect with people because you feel like, if I can't give them my best, I'm not worthy of existing in this relationship. And so how I earn love in this friendship, in this sisterhood, in this brotherhood, whatever it is, in my small group of the people I'm trying to connect with, I earn love by being perfect. I earn love by being the best. I earn love by being excellent. And if I can't be excellent, then it's not worth connecting with other people or showing other people, because I'll be rejected, right? So you're living out the narratives of the past in the present, but you don't realize that. You might just say to yourself, I'm a little bit of a loner, or I isolate sometimes, or I wish I could connect with people, I just don't know how to. And so my job is to help them to see the past, the present, and how they connect in the middle.
Let me ask you a high-level question. I'm so glad that mental health is now a very centered conversation. I mean, when I was growing up, we didn't talk about any of this. Like, we didn't have language for this. Nobody was talking about this. We weren't raised like this. Our parents didn't have access to any. This is a conversation that I'm so grateful to have as a grown-up. Super glad for my young adult kids that they get to kind of be raised in this mental health forward culture, or at least more than it's been. It's not enough. I know that. We're not as far as we need to be, but it's so much further than it's been. And so with this sort of language now that we have access to, that was a very long intro. Sorry, that was such a long on ramp. Here's my question.
No, it's good. It's good.
So sorry. What would you say constitutes trauma, as opposed to maybe this is a struggle, or is there a difference? You're a trauma specialist. And so is there a certain definition around this that's helpful?
Yes. I think the most helpful definition I like to use to differentiate between trauma and a moment that was just painful is that trauma is a past wound that affects how I perceive myself in the future and how I orient myself, rather how I perceive myself in the present and how I orient myself to the future. Right. So maybe this past moment that I experienced affects like how I show up today. And because of this past thing, I will never fill in the blank, or I don't trust friends. Why? Because of that past experience. And then you're projecting that into the future. Like, I'm not going to have many friends growing up or getting older. And I'm not going to really have close people around me as I age. Right. So it's a past wound that lives in your present and affects how you see the future. That's trauma, right? A painful moment is a moment that is painful, but does not foundationally shift how you see the world. Example, I might stub my toe, and by the end of the day, I forgot I stubbed my toe. You know, like, oh, I did stub my toe. Was that today? Was that yesterday? Right? In the moment, it was painful. And maybe it's painful for a couple of days, but I'm able to continue to operate within my set of values regularly and uninterruptedly. So here's what I think the question and the answer that I think that most of us have to face that is not comfortable, and I think it's really revolutionary, is that trauma is deeply personal and deeply contextual, meaning it cannot be defined solely from the outside. And I think that that can be hard for people, because for some people, it's like, well, I went through that and it was just painful for me. But do you have that person's context? And do you know what's valuable to them as a person? No? Well, then you can't define whether it's trauma or not.
Shout out to Astepro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. Guys, it's already allergy season in Texas. My yard is in full bloom and all the things are in the air. So I decided allergies will not win this year. So I tried Astepro. It has improved my nasal allergy symptoms and it's faster, bro. Astepro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. So get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astepro and go, you guys, today. Astepro allergy.com. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. Astepro and go. Summer is coming, and so is my much anticipated Me Camp. The past few summers, I've been taking some time to travel alone. It's time for me to read and explore small towns and meet new people. And this year, I'm thrilled to have a new way to plan my adventures. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world. The Viator app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there, no matter where you're traveling or what you're interested in. For my trip, I'm considering a wine tasting event or maybe a sunset sail. I've been reading real traveler reviews to get insider information from people who've already done the activities. Viator also offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if your plans change. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I want to ask you this because I have absolutely done this and experienced it and experienced a lot in my community. I lead kind of a large community of women. And one thing that I see is that when we are uncomfortable with who we are or how we are or our inner wiring, our history, you can fill in kind of the blank there. This default response that I think women have particularly, but maybe men too, is crafting like a curated version of ourselves, which is inauthentic, but certainly more palatable, or as we see it, as we perceive it, that interrupts any sort of genuine healing cycle, obviously. And so I'd like to hear you talk about that default setting and what you see as the path toward, I guess, authenticity, which requires so much vulnerability, and it's just a trigger for so many people, that sense of like an unguarded way to live in the world. So how do you see that journey from like the shiny penny version of myself all the way to the real one?
Yeah, that's a good question. One, I think that we do it to be safe. And I think that it's actually useful. Like, I think that it is not all bad. You know, it's useful. It kept us safe and it kept us as present as we could be in times where we didn't have the capacity to allow our full selves to be exposed.
That's right? Really,
it's kind of like, you know,
kind thing to say.
When you think about like, God didn't just leave Adam and Eve. Like, he was like, here, cover yourself up. You're feeling shame. Here's something to cover up. Right. So I don't think it's all bad, but I do think that if we learned, so resilience is built through this process of titration, which is like incrementally exposing yourself. And I think that sometimes as a culture, we can be like, go from hiding to like absolutely exposing yourself. And that's what authentic is. But the reality is our authenticity is not safe with everybody, you know? And I think we sense that and we don't know what to do with that reality, that I want to be authentic, but I don't know And I don't feel that my authenticity is safe with some people. And so titration is a powerful way to say, here's a little piece of information that's valuable to me, that I'm trusting you with, and giving that person time to treat that information or that part of ourselves with value, and then to continue to entrust them with more. Right. I think that's the power of communities like yours, is you get to practice in a group of people with a group of people who want to do the same thing. Right. Like a group of people who are all invested in saying, I'm willing to give you a little bit. Then I'm willing to give you a little more. Then I'm willing to give you a little more. Right. And like building that over time, because when we give too much in a way that we did not want to, in a way that costs us more than we were willing to pay, it develops resentment. And we're like, I gave you so much, you better show up for me. You know, you better be here for A, B, C, D, E, F, G. But there's a reality that like, it is okay for us to take time to build confidence, to be authentic with the right people. And I think the skills that we need to build are really figuring out what is safe to share, what risks am I willing to take, and developing a ability to say, how do I know that I can trust somebody? Without judging that, right? There are some people you will just not feel comfortable around. And that is enough of a reason.
That's good. That instinct that we're sometimes taught not to trust, that internal like wisdom is also a teacher. So I appreciate you saying that. I want to go back to something you said earlier, which is this very relatable question, which is, why do I keep doing this? Why do I keep doing this? Because if it was just mind over matter, if it was a matter of willpower, we would stop doing the thing, whatever the thing is. We would stop responding like that. We would stop triggering whatever. I'd like to hear you talk about, and you touched on it, but some of the impetus behind those repetitive behaviors that we actually hate. It's not like we enjoy being that way. It's not like we like responding like that. It's not creating anything good for us. But then also, and I could be just speaking for myself here, but this sometimes easier opt-out button, which even if I can get down to the bottom of it and trace it back to something in my childhood or earlier in my life, then I still have to overcome the temptation to just be a victim of it, right? Like, well, that happened to me and this isn't my fault anymore. And so if they wouldn't have done that, then I wouldn't be like this, which may not be true.
Yeah.
That is not helpful for like a vibrant future. So I've just put a whole lot on the table right there. So I would just like to hear you pick through that.
Yes. Well, you know, I'm going to challenge that thought. I think it can be helpful. I think that if we don't acknowledge that at one point in one context, we were a victim, and if we don't take the time to grieve that appropriately, that grief will find its way out in other places.
That's good.
And I think that a lot of people are deeply sad and deeply enraged at the ways that they have been victimized, but they haven't given it time to sit with it. And I think, I mean, I talk about this in my book, that the first step of healing is grieving, acknowledging what you didn't get, but you should have got, right? When we let like the sea of sorrow like drain, and it really is a sea, so it will take a long time. I feel like there's like an initial like, ooh, it's like just coming out, and then over time it's incremental, which is normal and natural. But I think that when we begin to let that sea of sorrow drain, like at the bottom of that is like wisdom and empowerment. And I think that many of us have not been given the space to grieve long enough to know what genuine internal empowerment feels like. And we keep trying to give ourselves that empowerment from the outside. Like we keep trying to like grasp motivation from somewhere. But like when you have cried enough tears, one thing I see in my therapy, I'll say this, there are times where my clients have just come to session and just cried and repeated the same thing over and over again for 6 months. And when you think about it, 6 months it's just small time to grieve a decade of abuse, you know? And without fail, there is one day when they're like, okay, I'm ready to get up. I'm ready to get up. I'm ready to do something about it. And I think many of us have not had the love of being allowed to just cry. Just cry and say, like, I'm crying for that teenager that was rejected. I'm crying for that young adult that was abused. I am crying for that woman who had to go through the divorce. I am crying for the heavy things I had to carry that nobody saw. I'm crying for how strong I appeared. I am crying for all the things that I had to deal with that no one knows but me. And sadness wants to be seen. It wants to be witnessed and just being there. And I think that what empowers more people is being able to grieve, because instead of us trying to like pull them up, they'll get up. They will get up. I love seeing that process when they're just, because there are times when you're like, oh, there's a lot. There's so much sadness here. But when that sadness is gone, at the bottom of that sadness, the person who holds the wound holds the wisdom. So if we lock away that version of us that is deeply wounded and wants to cry for 3 months, then we're also locking away the wisdom of those situations that we need for our present.
Oh, that's good. I identify with that. I went through just a devastating trauma like 4 years ago. I lost my marriage 26 years and didn't see it coming. It was a shock, a blindsidey shock. And I remember it took about 6 months before I could even think a good thought, like before I could, and I am strong. Like I lead women. I have every tool in my toolkit in terms of like development and emotional health. Like I know the things. It doesn't matter. Grief just has to run its course. And that's when I realized, ooh, I did not have a high enough tolerance for grief. And I noticed other people don't either. What is wrong with, why do we struggle with this grief process so much? Like, we just want to tidy it up and do it quickly.
Yeah. Oh, yes, man. You know, I think that's the nail on the head, as I think that some of us mask the desire for healing. Rather, we mask wanting to move on. We mask the fear of grief with wanting to move on. Like, we don't actually want to move on. I'm just afraid of what happens if I stay here. And I think that this might be a big statement to make, but I fully believe it. If we allowed people to grieve in the way that they needed to grieve, our entire society would have to change. We would have to slow down. Can you imagine that? Like, you know, I know clients whose parents have passed away and they got 4 weeks off. Like there's a world, and also like grief is a form of vulnerability, and vulnerability is contagious. It's wildfire, right? So if you start to grieve, then man, I start to feel that too. Like there's a researcher, his name's Yuri Hassan, and he talks about the brain to brain connection. It's called brain neurocoupling. He talks about the idea that when someone tells a story honestly and vulnerably with emotive language, the person who hears the story, their brain lights up as if they are experiencing it, right? They're like, on a biological level, we are emotionally connected to each other. And I think many times people push grief aside because they're like, I cannot sit with you in this thing that I have not given myself permission to experience yet.
That's real. And then if you're the griever, it's so interesting, this story that is so easy to tell ourselves, which is, I need to shape up because I'm a burden. I have a timeline that I can be sad about this, and then I'm a bummer to everybody around me. And that's just not really true. And I found that to not be true. I found that to be a story I was telling myself that I did not actually experience, because I could not pull myself out of the grief. Like I can normally just power through a thing. That's my personality. Couldn't do it. Like everything was too shattered. And so my experience of being at the bottom of the ocean every day for 6 months, which is a long time, it felt like a long time at the time, wasn't at all that it became a burden to everybody else. I noticed more what you said, that it was contagious. I grieved in public because I didn't know what else to do. I didn't have any other way to be. And so I grieved in front of my whole community, which is a lot of people. And in 20 years of leading women, we have never had our community galvanized more around anything. good thing I've said, any instruction I've given, any shared value we have. It was the grief out loud for that long. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. The women were just like, same, same everywhere. It's contagious. You're right.
Yes. Yeah. And people who grieve publicly are a reminder that humanity is precious. Like, we can kind of just like hurry up and move on. And it's like, I think that like we have as a society, we have lost our taste for people who deny humanity in everything and anything.
You're right.
Like, it's just not.
We're onto it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're living it. And the stories that used to encourage us are now the same stories that when we tell ourselves internally, oppress us out of feeling our real feelings. And I think that as a society, we're all like mentally, emotionally growing up into this space that's like, I don't want to hear a story where you went from being like beat up and broke down to being absolutely perfect and unwounded, because it makes me feel like I'm subhuman for deeply grieving something over time, when in reality you are too, but you're just scared to say it out loud.
That's right. That's an isolating story and it doesn't ring true. Because we just know. I'm so encouraged. I have a bunch of kids, and most of them are all young adults. They're in their 20s. And they're doing better at this than my age group. Do you notice this? Like, they've been handed a different story than the one that we got. So it's so refreshing to see that maybe this isn't a life sentence.
Yep. 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 There's a recalibration. I think that when people, now say what you want about social media. I know social media has its downfalls, all the things.
It's a double-edged sword.
It is a double-edged sword, and both sides are sharp. I'll say that.
Yes. Good
point. One thing I love about TikTok, now there can be some like people trying to just like get reactions, but like TikTok showed me that people cared more about what you had to say and who you were as a person than they did about how pretty things looked. Like, it was like, people are just like, I'm like, this is you. There's no way you look like that when you wake up in the morning, you know? And it was like, man, I feel like every time people really resonated with something, I looked crazy, but I did say something of value. And like, that's what mattered to them. And I also think that this generation is feeling, I can go into like the science of this. I can talk about epigenetics and how everything we don't resolve is passed on in our DNA. So we are genetically creating generations that have heavier burdens from the jump, from birth. Because when we don't do the work, someone has to do it. The work still has to be done, right? And I think about how this generation came in with such a low tolerance for the foolery. They're like, no. I feel like the kids were writing poems at seven years old about freaking oppression, you know?
That's like, right. Totally.
And I think that it's just a reminder that like the time for pretending is up. Humans, if they choose, are getting to be more human.
That's encouraging. That's encouraging, because back to our earlier point, it's contagious. So the more people that step into that free space, that kind of liberated way of living, the more will. It just, that is like a wonderful cascading effect. That's, I think, the direction that we're hopefully heading if we choose it, which brings me to my next question for you, because I like what you said earlier about trauma, how it's not necessarily what happened to you, but what it created and how it affected you. Thus, in any healing journey, sometimes our biggest obstacle is ourself. It's that inner voice that wants to truncate the process. It wants to discredit it. Often, my mean inner voice wants to blame me. What did I do wrong to cause this to be? And so I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about self-talk and what some of those internal messages should be challenged, and what should we begin to replace them with to start that journey back up out of the bottom of the ocean?
Yeah, well, I'll say it is much longer than what I'm going to present here in a real clinical relationship. But like, again, I would even challenge you saying like my critical inner voice, because I oftentimes try to remind my clients, like, you absorb the sounds and the voices and the words and the values of the people that you spent the most time around. Right? If I hear a Beyonce song in my head, I don't hear my voice singing a Beyonce song. I hear Beyonce's voice singing a Beyonce song, right? I can hear all the runs. I can't do the runs in real life, but I can hear all the details. I can hear the layers of the song, all the things. And so something I often ask my clients is, whose voice is that? Whose voice did you absorb? Whose voice in your life would talk to you like that? Whose voice like in your life would blame you for your own pain? Whose voice is that? And I think that it's a great place to differentiate, because just because it's something that plays in our mind doesn't mean it's true, doesn't mean it's real, doesn't mean it's accurate. It just means we heard it before somewhere else. That's it.
That's good.
Right? Like there are songs that like someone can turn on the radio. I had no clue I knew all the words to Shania Twain's song. I feel like a woman. Bam, bam. I had no clue. But what's hilarious is my sister was like, oh, we used to listen to that all the time. And I was like, really? Had no clue. Didn't remember. But the only way
stored.
Why? Because I heard it before. Because I love Shania Twain. Now I do love Shania Twain. Right. But like, if I had chosen to learn that song, that's one thing. But I didn't. It was just simply something I was around and something that I absorbed. And so like the question I ask my clients is, whose voices did you absorb? And it could be many voices of many people, right? So like when you say this is your fault, you should have known, who in your life would have said that to you out loud?
Right? I'm writing it down right now.
Yes, do it.
I really am. I'm writing it down. Like this needs some time. This needs some thought.
Absolutely. And I think we combat the internal voices with an external voice. A good friend and therapist, Mina B, once said, you need to talk out loud to yourself so sometimes you can hear your discrepancies. Because the discrepancies will help you realize where things are misaligned. And where things are misaligned, there's usually something external coming in. Because, I mean, and I've said this before on my social media, I do not know many women who actually have low self-esteem. I know a lot of women who had to pretend to have low self-esteem to stay connected to the people they loved.
Yikes. Well,
there's a difference when you're not talking down on yourself because you believe that. You're talking down on yourself because you learned that that's what would make that person comfortable being around you. And you desperately wanted connection. Right? You're absorbing the voices and the values of the people around you. And so for the listeners, I think that a great first step is like, what are the recurring thoughts I have about myself when something goes wrong, when I make a mistake, when I don't get what I want? And whose voice would say that to me, would say to me out loud what I say to myself in silence?
I'm writing.
I'm obsessed. My friend Chelsea was wearing the softest cashmere sweater in that perfect weight for spring. She told me it was under $50, made by a fantastic company named Quince. And I could shop for my laptop, which is my dream. So I immediately ordered the cashmere tee. Now I want it in every color. Quince offers staple pieces like Chelsea's Mongolian cashmere sweater, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, classic like 14 karat gold jewelry. You can upgrade your wardrobe with luxury essentials, but unbeatable prices. You guys, seriously, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And I know what you're thinking, but Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible practices and premium fabrics, which I love. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/hatmaker for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/hatmaker to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/hatmaker.
Did you know more than 75% of Americans experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% seek out a solution for that pain? Your feet don't have to hurt. So let me tell you about Superfeet. Superfeet has a wide range of insoles for every activity, every shoe, and every foot, from cushioned and flexible to firm and supportive. You can dial in your fit by taking their quick quiz online. Answer just a few short questions and Superfeet will recommend the best insole choice for you. Foot biomechanics may be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. So when you add the signature orthotic shape of Superfeet insoles to your shoes, you give your feet comfort and support where they need it most, helping redistribute forces to reduce stress and strain on your entire body, not just your feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. Your foot health is an important part of your overall well-being. Visit superfeet.com and enter the promo code FTL at checkout for 15% off your first order plus free shipping.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
This is what I'm having right now is a therapy session. Sorry. Yes. I know you thought you were coming on a podcast, but
we can make them both. Yeah. And, you know, I think that a lot of us are, we're learning to parse out, and parsing out happens when we slow down, where we're learning to say like, this keeps showing up, but I don't like it. I don't agree with it. I don't even necessarily believe it, but I just keep saying it to myself.
On your socials, I love how one of your recurring themes is pace and the speed at which we're doing everything, frankly. And you have this clarion call that is pretty consistent, like, everybody slow the F down.
Yes.
And I'm drawn to it. I'm drawn to it because this is part and parcel with healing and with mental wellness. And I think I'd like to hear you talk a little bit more about what you see and what you would rather see, frankly.
Yes. I see people who, including myself, so don't even, I'm not doing a them thing. I'm talking about a us thing. I see us rushing. I see us being lured into a pace of life that's not sustainable for healing or humanity. It is not sustainable to live like, and I think we deep down at our core, we know that. We know this is not sustainable. Like, I cannot have peace at this pace. I cannot have joy at this pace. I can't have connection at this pace. I can't even change the road. Like, when you think about a car who's about to turn, what's the first thing they say to you when you're about to make a turn? Slow down. If you are trying to make, like, people don't even have the pace and the space to shift because they're living life so fast that, like, every time they try to make a slight move, they crash and burn, you know? And I think that I'm just realizing, like, oh, my humanity is good. God created it good. And if I believed I was good for just existing as I am, how would I treat myself? The world is not going to teach me as a person. The world is not going to teach me as a woman. The world is not going to teach me as a Black woman. The world is not going to teach me as a mother how to love myself well. That is my responsibility, and a responsibility that I gratefully get to share with my community and with my husband. But like learning, like, what do I actually need? A question I ask myself and ask my clients is, if there are no consequences for the choices that you make, what choices would you make to live a better life right now?
Oh, that's such a fun question. And also illuminating. I bet almost nobody would say, oh, I wouldn't change a thing.
Exactly.
Nobody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. This pace is unsustainable and we know it. And it's rewarded behavior. So, I mean, there's a reason we do it. We get our snaps for it. Our culture is going to be like, burn yourself into the ground. We're here for it.
Yeah.
Like productivity.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Never miss a day of school. Get an award. It's like, maybe your kid needed a mental health day.
God, totally. Totally. I want to just wrap it up here with you because I think one reason why so many people are drawn to you, why your influence is just growing and growing and growing, like on everywhere that you are lending leadership, is this: you're a cheerleader. You're like, I'm here for you. You can, you have this, you can do this. You are valuable. It's comforting. Like, it's just comforting. It's not a message we necessarily see everywhere. And so I wonder if this is who you just are. Is this something you've developed in yourself? Have you become the voice in your own heart that you always wanted? It's a wonderful way to lead, and it's really moving.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. That means a lot. You know, I think, if I'm being honest, I think it's who I've always been, but I think it's also who I'm allowing myself to become again. Because I feel like my own trauma made me feel like the safer thing was to be hard-hearted and to be judgmental and to look at other people and find value in competition and find value in I'm better than or comparison. I think that I was the quick relief of not feeling worse than other people for a long time lured me into existing in a way that, to be honest, I didn't feel proud of. I didn't feel like it was me. And so I feel like the last couple of years has been my time to be like, this is who I am. This is who I'm going to be. And it's easy for me to cheer people on because I have my own stuff. But for the most part, that's how I talk to myself. And that's how I talk to, you know, my husband and my kids, because honestly, it's how God talks to me. And I love that. So
I do too. This is like a really powerful 45-minute conversation. You have really put some thoughts in my brain that I'm going to go spend some time with today. And I know for sure my community is going to want to know more from you and hear more from you and put themselves under your leadership. So can you just talk real quickly? Where can people find you? Where can they find your amazing book on all the things?
Yes, absolutely. So you can find me on Instagram, on TikTok, on X at @KobeCampbell_. So KobeCampbell_. You can find my book, Why Am I Like This? How to Break Cycles, Heal from Trauma, and Restore Your Faith, everywhere. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Books A Million, all the places. And I love that book. I love that book so much. It is like my third child. So I really pray that it blesses whoever reads it.
Same. I know exactly what you mean. And everybody listening, like, we scratched the surface. If you want more, it's in that book. It digs into all these thoughts and all these questions and ideas. And so that is a wonderful place to start. Okay. Last question. I ask everybody this on every show, and you can answer this however you want. I borrowed this question from a priest that I love. She asks, what is saving your life right now?
Poetry.
Oh, tell me more.
Poetry. I used to write poetry a ton. Poetry used to be my thing. Like, I used to do competitions, all stuff. And like, just realizing that, like, I feel closest to God in creativity and in play. And I was like, you know, instead of like just journaling how pissed off I am, maybe I can like write a poem. And beautiful. I'm like, oh, I love this. I enjoy this. It's fun. So that's been saving my life. That and my Nespresso.
Oh, say less. Say less.
My Nespresso, girl. Them pods are saving my life.
Look, that'll literally get me out of bed in the morning.
Uh-huh.
I will think, same. I could have coffee in 5 minutes if I, as soon as my feet hit the floor.
I feel that.
I love that. Real quick, do you have another favorite poet that you love to read or that you love to have in your feed even? I know that's so put on the spot. Anytime somebody asks me some book I love, I can't think of a book I've ever read in my whole life.
I know. I'm like, what? Like, I don't have a bookshelf behind me. Another poet. I really love Maya Angelou.
Oh, God.
I really, master. Really love her master. Work. I also, Mikkel C. Clark. I don't know. He's on Instagram. MICHELLE. He is so poignant with taking such complicated emotions and making them into really simple phrases. But you read it and you're like, someone gets it, you know?
Yeah.
So I love his work.
Okay. Awesome. We need our poets. We need our poets.
We need
our poets and our artists and our therapists, and together, like, we can find beauty again. I know it.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you. I am so
glad I had this morning with you. I really am. I am thankful for your wisdom. Thank you for the labor that this is to bring this to bear. This is, you deal in people's trauma. It's hard and it's heavy, and you choose it. And I recognize that heavy, heavy emotional lift. And thank you, because it serves more than your clients. It serves the rest of us too. And so I am excited for my community to know you and to learn from you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Thank you
for having me. It was a pleasure talking.
All right, you guys. Ooh, lots in there. Lots in there. This for me is going to be a re-listen for sure. Just a reminder, if you ever want to watch any of these interviews, you can go over to my YouTube channel. We visually record all of these too. So you can watch our conversation and see Kobe. And sometimes, I mean, that's how I experience all of our podcasts. So to me, that's my preferred way. That is always a resource for you if you'd love to consume this particular episode that way. Okay. This is a good one to share, guys. This one might be one to put in a few text threads to your favorite people. I love raising our kids like this too. So thanks for listening. Oh, by the way, you can go to jenhatmaker.com under the podcast tab and get everything here. I'll have it in one place, this episode and the show notes, and then all of the handles to Kobe's social, the link to her book, just everything. You can find it in one spot. And be sure to subscribe if you haven't already. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll never miss an episode. It'll just come right to you week in and week out. I hope you are enjoying the season as much as I am. And I'm so delighted to have introduced you to Kobe if you didn't already know her. So, all right, you guys, we sure love you. See you next week.
The For the Love podcast with Jen Hatmaker is a presentation of Odyssey and produced by Four Eyes Media, with Laura Neitzling, producer, Abby Stevens, production director, Gregory DiMario, production assistant, and Lauren Winfield, researcher. Odyssey's executive producers are Jenna Weiss-Berman and Leah Reese-Dennis. Special thanks to the team at Odyssey, Maura Curran, Melissa Wester, Matt Casey, Kate Hutchinson, Eric Donnelly, Aaron Constantino, Kurt Courtney, and Hilary Schupf. Listen and follow For the Love, an Odyssey podcast produced by Four Eyes Media, on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a production of Four Eyes Media.